Tom shook himself. Never mind about that. My arms are tired and I've got to get below. Have you anything else to report?
Not of significance to your survival or mission.
I take it you haven't managed to coax the ship's mini-library to deliver anything on Herbie or the derelict fleet.
The holo flowed into sharp geometries.
That is the main problem, isn't it? Dr. Baskin asked me the same question 13 hours ago.
And did you give her a more direct answer?
Finding ways to bypass the access programming on this ship's mini-library is the reason I was put aboard in the first place. I would tell you if I had succeeded.
The machine's disembodied voice was dry enough to desiccate melons.
The Timbrimi have long suspected that the Library Institute is less than neutral, that the branch libraries sold by them are programmed to be deficient in subtle ways, to put troublesome races at a disadvantage. The Timbrimi have been working on this problem since days when your ancestors wore animal skins, Thomas Orley. It was never expected we would achieve anything more on this trip than gathering a few shards of new data and perhaps elimination of a few minor barriers.
Orley understood how the long-lived machine could take such a patient perspective. Still, he resented it. It would be nice to think something had come of the grief Streaker and her crew had fallen into. After all the surprises we've encountered, this voyage must have served up more than a few bits to crunch.
The propensity of Earthlings to get into trouble and to learn thereby was the reason my owners agreed to this mad venture, although no one expected such a chain of unusual calamities as befell this ship. Your talents were underrated.
There was no way to answer that. Tom's arms had begun to hurt. Well, I'd better get back. In an emergency, I'll contact you via ship's comm.
Of course.
Orley let go and landed in a crouch by the closed doorway, a rectangle high on one steeply sloping wall.
Dr. Baskin has just passed word Takata Jim has ordered the survey party home.
The Nis spoke abruptly.
She thought you would want to know.
Orley cursed. Metz might have had a hand in that. How were they to repair the ship without looking for raw materials? Krydike's strongest reason for coming to Kithrop had been the abundance of pre-refined metals in an oceanic environment accessible to dolphins. If Hikahi's prospectors were called back, the danger had to be severe. Or someone was panicking. Tom paused and looked up.
This, we must know what it is the Galactics think we found.
The sparkles were muted.
I have done a thorough search of open files in this ship's micro-branch library for any record that might shed light on the mystery of the derelict fleet. Aside from a few vague similarities between the patterns we saw on those gigantic hulls and some ancient cult symbols, I can find no support for a hypothesis that the ships we found are in any way connected to the fabled progenitors.
But you found nothing to contradict it either?
Correct. The derelicts might or might not be linked with the one legend which binds all oxygen-breathing races in the five galaxies.
It could be we found huge bits of flotsam of no historical significance then.
True. At the other extreme, you may have made the biggest archaeological and religious find of the age. The mere possibility helps to explain the battle shaping up in this solar system, indicative of how many of the galactic cultures feel about events so long ago. So long as this ship is the sole repository of information about the derelict fleet, the survey vessel Streaker remains a great prize, valued by every brand of fanatic.
Orley had hoped the NIS would find evidence to make their discovery innocuous. Such proof might have been used to get the ETs to leave them alone. Otherwise, Streaker would have to find a way to get the information to Earth and let wiser heads figure out what to do with it.
"You keep contemplating, then," he told the NIS. "Meanwhile, I'll help keep the Galactics off our backs. Now, can you tell me..."
"Of course I can," the NIS interrupted again. "The corridor outside is clear. Don't you think I would let you know if anyone were outside?"
Tom shook his head, certain the machine had been programmed to do this now and again. It would be typical of the Timbrimey. Earth's greatest allies were also famous practical jokers. When a dozen other calamitous priorities had been settled, he intended taking a monkey wrench to the machine and explaining the mess to his Timbrimey friends as an unfortunate accident. As the door panel slipped aside, Tom grabbed the rim and swung out to drop into the dim hallway ceiling below. The door hummed shut automatically. Red alert lights flashed at intervals down the gently curved corridor. "All right," he thought. "Our hopes for a quick getaway are dashed, but I've already thought out some contingency plans." A few he had discussed with the captain. One or two he had kept to himself. "I'll have to set a few into motion," he thought, knowing from experience that chance diverts all schemes. "As likely as not, it will be something totally unexpected that turns up to offer us our last real hope."
Chapter 6 Galactics. The first phase of the fight was a free-for-all. A score of warring factions scratched and probed at each other, exploring for weaknesses. Already a number of wrecks drifted in orbit, torn and twisted and ominously luminous. Glowing clouds of plasma spread along the path of battle, and jagged metal fragments sparkled as they tumbled. In her flagship, a leathery queen looked upon view screens that showed her the battlefield. She lay on a broad, soft cushion and stroked the brown scales of her belly in contemplation. The displays that rimmed Krat's settee showed many dangers. One panel was an overlay of curling lines, indicating zones of anomalous probability. Others pointed out where the slew from psychic weapons was still dangerous. Clusters of lights were the other fleets, now regrouping as the first phase drew to a close. Fighting still raged on the fringes. Krat lounged on a cushion of Vletor skin, shifted her weight to ease the pressure in her third abdomen. Battle hormones always accelerated the quickening within her. It was an inconvenience, which in ancient days had forced her female ancestors to stay in the nest, leaving two stupid males the fighting. No longer, though. A small bird-like creature approached her side. Krat took a lean plum from the tray it proffered. She bit it and savored the juices that ran over her tongue and down her whiskers. The little Forski put down the tray and began to sing a crooning ballad about the joys of battle. The avian Forski had been uplifted to full sapiency, of course. It would have been against the code of uplift to do less with a client race. But while they could talk and even fly spacecraft in a pinch, independent ambition had been bred out of them. They were too useful as domestics and entertainers to be fated anything but specialization. Adaptability might interfere with their graceful and intelligent performance of those functions. One of her smaller screens suddenly went dark. The destroyer in the Soro rear guard had been destroyed. Krat hardly noticed. The consolidation had been inexpensive so far. The command room was divided into pie sections. Krat could look into every baffled unit from her couch of command. Her crew bustled about, each a member of a Soro client race, each hurrying to do her will in its own sub-specialty. From the sectors for navigation, combat, and detection, there was a quieting of the hectic battle pace at last.
In planning, though, she saw increased activity as the staff evaluated developments, including a new alliance between the Abdicator and Transcendor forces. A Paha sub-officer poked its head out of detection sector. Under hooded eyes, Krat watched it dash to a food station, snatch a steaming mug of Amokla, and hurry back to its post. The Paha race had been allowed more racial diversity than the Forski to enhance their value as ritual warriors. It left them less tractable than suited her, but it was a price one paid for good fighters. Krat decided to ignore the incident. She listened to the little Forski sing of the coming victory, of the glory that would be Krat's when she captured the Earthlings, and finally squeezed their secrets out of them. Klaxons shrieked. The Forski leapt in alarm and fled to its cubby. Suddenly, there were running Paha everywhere.
"Andrew Raider," the tactical officer shouted. "Ships 2 through 12, it has appeared in your midst. Take evasive maneuvers, quickly!"
The flagship bucked as it, too, swerved wildly to avoid a spread of missiles. Krat's screen showed a pulsing danger blue dot, the daring Tandu cruiser that had popped into being within her fleet, which was even now pouring fire into the Soro ships. Curse their damnable probability drives. Krat knew that nobody else could move about as quickly as the Tandu, because no other species was willing to take such chances. Krat's mating claw throbbed in irritation. Her Soro ships were so busy avoiding missiles, nobody was firing back.
"Fools!" Krat hissed into her communicator. "Ships 6 and 10, hold your ground and concentrate fire on the obscenity!"
Then, before her words reached her sub-captains, the terrible Tandu ship began to dissolve on its own. One moment it was there, ferocious and deadly, ranging in on a numerous but helpless foe. The next instant, the spindly destroyer was surrounded by a coruscating, discolored halo of sparks. Its shield folded, and the cruiser fell into itself like a collapsing tower of sticks. With a brilliant flash, the Tandu vanished, leaving a cloud of ugly vapor behind. Through her own ship's shields, Krat felt an awful psychic roar. "We were lucky," Krat realized as the Psi-noise slowly faded. It was not without reason that other races avoided the Tandu's methods, but if that ship had lasted a few moments longer... No harm was done, and Krat noted that her crew had all done their jobs. Some were slow, however, and these must be punished. She beckoned the chief tactician, a tall, burly Paha. The warrior stepped toward her. He tried to maintain a proud bearing, but his drooping cilia told that he knew what to expect. Krat rumbled deep in her throat. She started to speak, but in the emotion of the moment, the Soro commander felt a churning pressure within. Krat grunted and writhed, and the Paha officer fled as she panted on the Vletor cushion. Finally, she howled and found relief. After a moment, she bent forward to retrieve the egg she had laid. She picked it up, punishments and battles temporarily banished from her mind. In an instinct that predated her species' uplift by the timid hull 2 million years before, she responded to the smell of pheromones and licked birthing slime from the tiny air cracks, which seemed the leathery egg. Krat licked it a few extra times, for pleasure. He rocked the egg slowly, in an ancient, untampered reflex of motherhood.
This ends Psi 2 of Cassette 1,